Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And as we begin this program, just to advise you, this portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's expected plans for a big 4th of July event, I'm sure, there in London. We'll find out what's going on in that burg here in just a moment. Just to remind you, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joins us every Wednesday afternoon. And Tom, a good afternoon. Thanks very much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Lockwood. Always a pleasure.
Now, the question I have for you as I begin the program, 4th of July, will you be celebrating? What happens there in London on 4th of July?
Well, nothing as such. I mean, it's an American holiday, not a British. I mean, the American embassy always has it. Sometimes we have a party. We invite our British friends to come celebrate the day that Britain got rid of the colonies. it's a sort of joke thing. We don't have you sent me an email asking if we have an equivalent to the 4th of July. Not really. There's the Queen's birthday. There's the Trooping of the Colour. April 15th is St. George's Day. There's also a day for St. Andrew's Day, Scottish patron saint.
But you don't...
And the St. Patrick's Day and the St. David's Day in Wales. But there's no sort of celebration of British life, which is what I think the 4th of July is. It's a celebration of American life.
Well, I disagree with you. I would think that the Queen's birthday is kind of a designation of recognition.
But we don't have big parades.
Okay.
We don't have big parades. We don't have fireworks.
Okay.
We don't have things like that.
All right. Well, I wondered about that. Of course, we'll get onto a few other issues associated with 4th of July here in a moment. I want to talk about Bastille Day, which is just around the corner as well. But before we do that, what's the weather like there in your fair burg? And what do you anticipate on the 4th of July for the weather? Because, of course...
Oh, perfect weather. It's just over 70 degrees here in the UK and predicted to remain so for about a month.
Mm. I tell you what.
On the continent, they're absolutely broiling.
Right.
Tremendous heat wave. And people are seriously worried about it.
I understood. And I would also say that a unique situation, because many of those countries do not have air conditioning, don't even anticipate that. Well, that leads me to the temperatures that's going to be with Bastille Day. It's just a few days away, if I'm not mistaken.
I think the temperatures there will be about 100.
Oh, wow.
If not higher.
Well, it's 100 here.
It has topped, I think, at 107.
My goodness. All right. Bastille Day is going to be a warm day for the French as well. Let's talk about...
It was 200-odd years ago.
A very hot day, shall we say. Let's talk about other events there in the UK. Women's World Cup, and there's been some observations that maybe one of our players was a little disrespectful. How did this pan out in light of the fact?
I read it, and certainly the England coach thought she was.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there's a sort of tradition in international sport where you are always courteous towards your opponents.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it just seems that, you know, the U.S. women's soccer team has sort of been balking against that tradition.
Right.
And gloating a bit too much and disregarding common courtesy. That's how it's reported here.
Right. I can appreciate that. By the way, I've got to make mention of the fact, of course, we're talking with Tom Arms from his home in London, England. And, of course, you hear a member of his family barking away at his comments. But I've got to make mention of that, Tom. But, you know, the aspect barking away of the response to the U.S. team, is that not seen as just sort of heightened, you know, shall we say, athletic endeavor?
As I said, it's always a tradition, you know, when you win, you say,
okay,
they played well. Thank you very much indeed for the match.
Right.
It was a good effort, that sort of thing. They don't go doing little symbols with their pinkies.
Understood.
You know, and it's, it's courtesy.
Okay, well, you know, it goes back to the issue there of the former Prime Minister Winston Churchill, who said, "In victory, magnanimity."
Magnanimity, yes.
That's a hard one for me. Magnanimity. Yes.
Having said that, it was very interesting. I was talking to someone today, and we were talking about the game last night.
Uh huh.
The game. And someone came up, "Do you realize what you're saying?" And I said, "What do you mean?" "You're talking not about the women's game, but the game. That women's soccer
right.
has been elevated above the status of women's soccer to being a game in its own right. That the fact that there were women playing was immaterial. It was just a big, important game."
That, you know, it's interesting. That is one of the questions I was going to ask is, how does this compare in light of the fact that you've got the Men's World Cup, but the Women's World Cup now? And so it's gaining, shall we say, equal coverage and
very close to it. Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes, absolutely.
And the
women have done better or just as well as the men.
Wow. All right. Then. I'm hearing something in the background. I'm sorry. The question then goes to the issue of, you know, the celebration associated with the World Cup. Obviously, there was significant celebration following the Men's World Cup. Will there be a great deal of, you know, enthusiastic celebration?
I don't know. I think there might be. I mean, okay. The tradition here is that if someone does well, and they don't have to necessarily win the cup,
mm-hmm.
but in the Men's Cup, they did well. And they got to the semi-final, and so they had an open-top bus tour through London, and all the fans came out and cheered them.
Well,
and that's traditional. I don't know if the women are going to get the same sort of reception. It'd be very interesting.
Well,
it was a good game. It was a very good game. Both teams played very well.
Now, a question, of course, we're talking about the United Kingdom here. What about in Europe? What's the feeling related to, again, the apparent, the strength of the women's program, but also the Americans? Does that in any way indulge?
A lot of people note that the women's soccer team,
mm-hmm.
that women's soccer, or football as we call it here,
right.
Is much bigger in the States than it is in Europe. Simply because it has no competition on the men's side,
right?
To speak of, not as much competition. Men's soccer or football is so much bigger, whereas in the States you have football, gridiron football,
right?
And so you know, women don't play gridiron football, or very few do. There's a saying here, and that is that soccer is a game. Is a gentleman's game played by hooligans, and rugby is a hooligan's game played by gentlemen.
Okay.
So therefore, soccer is much more suitable for women. I think that's a bit unfair because I've seen a lot of people injured playing soccer. It's still they notice that that soccer, women's soccer in the States. As a game for women is much bigger than it is over here.
Now, is this raising the level of support for women's sports in the UK? And
absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I think people, as I said, you know, we were talking about the game, not the women's game.
The game.
That the people, the gender of the people who were playing was immaterial. The fact is they played well and it was a good, entertaining game.
Well, no question. And in fact, I would argue that in many regards, the benefit of watching the women is quite frankly, and I'm not talking about the appearance of the players, by the way, but it is a very, it's a very entertaining game and to a large degree, requires a great deal more, if you will, strategy and nuance. The men, of course, and I would argue that women are equally capable physically, but there is a greater, just my perception, a greater nuance. Quick question before we go to the break. In Europe, of course, we're talking United Kingdom, but in Europe, is there a growing awareness of women's participation in sports?
Yes, definitely. I think probably it's strongest in the UK at the moment, but there's certainly a growing awareness. I mean, Yeah, I was just, it made me think about feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 30 years ago, the thought of a major women's soccer team or, you know, having so many female members of Congress or anything else
right.
was totally unheard of. You know, it just wasn't really thought about. And so I think people nowadays, being a woman is important, obviously, but it's not the importance that it was.
But let's put it this way. It doesn't get the focus and the surprise that it once gave. Would that be a better way of describing that?
I'm sorry?
It would be less of a shock to see women involved in either business, politics, or sports. So, I was just curious about that. All right, we'll take a quick break on that. We've got Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this evening. Joining us from London, England, his home, as a matter of fact. And we heard just a few moments ago that they don't celebrate July 4th in the UK. Cannot imagine why. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've been chatting now about the World Cup and just the events there in the European community. I want to move back here for a few moments with you, Tom. Let's talk about the U.S. Let's talk first about, we mentioned at the opening, the 4th of July. You've made a note here, tanks at the 4th of July. Of course, the president is looking to celebrate the 4th with a display, a military display in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we have all the fireworks display and things of this nature. How is that being described there in the European community?
Well, the fact that they're mentioning it in the context of military displays at the 4th of July being unusual and reporting at great length the comments of people saying that this is a sign that Trump is moving towards authoritarianism gives you an indication of how it's being received. I think I've spoken to a couple of people. The people who haven't spent the 4th of July in America sort of shrug their shoulders and say, well, why not?
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, they have tanks at Bastille Day. They have, you know, tanks and when the Soviet Union celebrates its national day or Pakistan celebrates its national day. Why not in the U.S.? Well, as I've spoken to people who've been there for the 4th of July and they say, no, it just doesn't sound right for the 4th of July. It's not a celebration of military prowess. It's a celebration of the American way of life
mm-hmm.
with marching bands and shiners and
right.
Kiwanis clubs and
right.
things like that. And the military is not part of American life. It's the defense of American life. And it doesn't have a direct role in the 4th of July. So it's two views, if you like.
All right. That's an interesting observation on that. By the way, we haven't touched on this in our notes prior to the program. And, of course, Tom Arms with us from London, England. The controversy over the Betsy Ross flag and Nike shoes, has there been much coverage of that? And if there hasn't been, we'll just go on. I'm just curious.
Not a great deal. There's a discussion on the radio this morning about it. I would say the people who phoned in and were split. Everyone who was on the left was saying, this is disgusting. The Betsy Ross flag is used by the American Nazi Party. Well, you know, and other people were saying, well, how did they even know it was used by the American Nazi Party? You can't.
That's news to me. But more importantly, it's just any number of things can be misappropriated. And of course, there is historic relevance. I'm just curious. More of the question I have for you, Tom, and we'll move on to other items. The fact that you've got businesses intervening in issues of political nature. Do you have such situations there where, for example, a company would in some way appropriate the use of, I don't know, maybe the British flag or some,
yeah.
maybe, I'm just curious.
No, we do. It's used all the time as
okay.
on tourist tack, memorabilia, things like that. And you certainly have a situation where it's been hijacked by political parties. Now, there are four flags. Each of the constituent parts of the United Kingdom has a patron saint.
Uh-huh.
And a flag which represents them, and all together they are put together for the Union Jack. But you will have people like the far right parties, like the British National Party, will wave the English flag and they will wave it at their rallies. At the same time, when England plays Scotland, you'll find that people paint their faces either with the English flag or the flag of St. Andrews.
Yeah. So I'm just curious. It is, to some degree, almost an unnecessary controversy. And I was going to say,
I think you have to look at it in the context of each individual instance.
Well, there is. But as one of my callers last evening pointed out, 13 stars represented 13 individual states. Some of those states had nothing to do with the concerns associated with slavery. And so it's an appropriation of an issue or of a historic event to promote a specific issue. So it's happening around the world. Let's move on to other items here for a moment. Other coverage, and that, of course, is the coverage recently of visitations by U.S. representatives to the southern border, the U.S. southern border. Is that getting much coverage there?
If we're talking about the migration centers?
Yes.
Yes, certainly it is. You know, there have been photographs and videos of overcrowded migration centers, and the concern is that the Trump administration is not living up to its human rights responsibilities. They can send them back to where they are, but they have a responsibility to see that they are housed and fed mm-hmm. and looked after while their cases are being heard. That is what is being said.
Okay, I'm curious, is there any comparison of that situation here the situation here in the United States to the similar circumstances in Greece, Italy, Spain, Turkey, Hungary, where we had, of course, situations of asylum seekers that also encountered severe circumstances? Is there any comparative analysis?
No, I haven't seen any.
That's unfortunate.
I know in Italy, yes, they have had cases where they haven't let people off the ship and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think once they're off, they're generally looked after.
Well, no.
Sometimes they're sent back.
I find that interesting that the focus there is that humanitarian rights are in question here in the United States, and yet we've seen numerous situations, quite frankly, just to remind folks, and you had that same situation in the UK where people were coming aboard, coming in boat people, as they were called, but you had circumstances in Italy for sure where you had numerous drownings, and you had drownings in the Mediterranean because of people who...
The government is not responsible for those drownings.
Ah, but there's a feeling
the people traffickers have loaded 500 people onto an inflatable craft.
But here
it's when they reach the shores of Lampedusa in the island off Italy or something like that. What happens to them then?
And the question is, I've seen pictures of the asylum camps, and of course some of the challenges associated with that. And the tent cities. But at the same time, I just have to make mention of the fact that at times I think that there is a certain degree of, well, I'll say international hypocrisy out there, because I think the circumstances...
I'm sure it exists.
So I
think we, you know, it's common humanity, which we all have to think of. You know,
right.
We don't want people starving to death. As our responsibility, we don't want them dying of disease. We don't want them getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that whether they're Italians or Germans or Americans or Brits, you have a responsibility.
Well, the other aspect of it is that, and of course the challenge here is the role that members of Congress played insofar as being resistant to providing additional services. And I don't know, is that story even being told? Okay.
It's focused on the overcrowding at the migrant centers.
Okay. Yeah. It unfortunately is how the message is being spun. So we're seeing that here in the States as well. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon, joining us from London, England. Tom, we'll take a quick break. I want to come back. We've got a plethora of items to talk about. Trump in North Korea, how that was covered, what was said, Ivanka and the G20, which really relates to tariffs, China, and the European Union, and then a comment by Vladimir Putin that liberalism is dead, interestingly enough. And I'm thinking this from a perspective of a communist. Liberalism is dead. And then we'll probably touch briefly on Brexit as well with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, a lot to talk about here. Let's start with Trump's visit to North Korea. How was that played there in the European community?
Very interesting. I mean, there were people who basically said, yeah, great. And there were people who said, yeah, great, but do we really want to give credibility to an authoritarian regime? I was talking today to a former diplomat, mm-hmm. British diplomat, who was based in South Korea, who thinks that this could be Trump's footnote in history. And I said, well, you know, I can't see it, because I didn't quite agree. I can't see he's going to succeed, because you need more diplomatic work being done by what we call the Sherpas, you know, the official diplomats. And part of the problem is that if you start at the top, then, you know, when it fails completely.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very risky route. And he said, well, the problem is in North Korea, there are no diplomats to speak of. Everything is centralized. And so he had to start at the top. If he can just keep talking, even if all he's doing is exchanging pleasantries by tweet, that is progress and will hopefully lead to something.
Outstanding. I've got to bring up another topic associated with this similar situation, and that is Iran. And, of course, the announcement that Iran is...
He said the exact opposite about Iran.
I know, in some regards. But bring up Iran and the fact that the president has, that is, President Trump has been rather aggressive in his approach to Iran and the sanctions similar to Korea, as a matter of fact. Iran has now announced that they are very close to enough nuclear fuel to initiate a nuclear device. My question, is there concern in the European community?
Well, what Iran is also doing, it's quite made quite clear, but it expects the Europeans
right
to put pressure upon the U.S. to back down on the sanctions and the Iran nuclear accord.
Is that possible?
And the problem is that the Europeans, you know, Trump is not going to give in.
Okay.
They've tried. They can't afford to lose their contracts with the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so Trump is proceeding bilaterally with Israel. And again, my diplomatic friend said it's not clear whether U.S. foreign policy towards Iran is an extension of Israeli foreign policy,
okay,
or vice versa.
All
he
right.
thinks it's merely an extension of Israeli foreign policy.
Moving on to other items, Ivanka and G20, she played a key role. What was the opinion there of the European community?
Well, the opinion was that she shouldn't have. I don't know if it was reported, but a video was released of her being snubbed by Christine Lagarde. What was particularly significant about this was who released the video. It was the French government. That, I think, speaks volumes of what they think of Ivanka Trump being used in the way she's being used. That she is a daughter. Lots of daughters, lots of sons of politicians go into politics, but they're not pulled along to G20 summit meetings.
Wait a second. No different than a wife?
No. She was being treated a lot differently than a wife.
Okay.
That's how it's reported here.
So,
you know,
I think you've made your point clear that she's not perceived well in the European community, yet she has, I've just got to make mention, has been invited on numerous occasions to talk specifically, as interestingly we come around to this subject again, women's roles in business and in government. She's been a very big supporter of more involvement of women in government. And of course, Christine Lagarde, of course, herself a woman with the European Union. I find that interesting. Let's move on to a situation that's kind of related to that. And in fact, was part of the conversation of the G20, the tariffs, China and the EU.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that China now appears to have been put on the back burner again. I think that Trump desperately wants, it looks as if Trump wants to avoid the tariffs if he can, but he's put the EU back on the front burner. The EU is always uncomfortable with this. They want to work in tandem with the US. They see it as part of the transatlantic alliance. They see the Trump administration as trying to undermine the transatlantic alliance and undermine the EU, break it up, in fact, which Steve Bannon, who I think remains a sort of voice for Trump, Steve Bannon has made no secret of the fact that he wants and that he thinks Trump wants to see the European Union broken up into constituent national states again.
Well, let's talk about this in relationship to the EU. You've got a note here, the battle for the EU top job and a protest in European Union Parliament. What's the future of the EU?
Well, I'm always asked this. You always ask this, and I think the EU will continue in some form or another. We've had a change at the top following the European parliamentary elections.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new head of the European Parliament. David Maria Sassoli, who's an Italian. We have a new head of the Commission, who's Charles Michel. We have a new head of the Central Bank, who's Christine Lagarde.
Right.
And we have von Leyen, who is the former German defense minister, who is the new European president.
So what does this mean for the EU?
Well, each of them, it's very interesting. Each of them is slightly different. Von Leyen, the German, is very much in favor of increased defense cooperation.
Okay.
And wants to increase defense spending. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
David Maria Sassoli, is talking in terms of, being tougher on immigration. He's Italian, of course. Tougher on immigration and possibly moves towards a two-tier Europe. Charles Michel, the Belgian, he actually resigned from the prime ministership of Belgium because his coalition partners attacked him for signing a UN pact on immigration.
So they
all have different positions.
But
does
that mean
it's a balancing act?
You're kicking the can down the road. Help me out. Do you see this as strengthening the EU at this point?
Difficult to say.
Okay. Let's talk about.
I'm sorry. I don't think you can be black and white like that.
All right. Let's talk about the role of Brexit on this one very quickly. Constitutional crisis, by the way. What gives?
Well, this is Boris Johnson coming out and saying that if he doesn't get his way, if Parliament does not support leaving the EU on the 31st of October, deal or no deal, he will ask the Queen to what's called prorogue Parliament or suspend Parliament.
Mm.
And if he does, then the government, which he heads, will have total responsibility for all laws. Now, the last time this happened was in the 1640s, and it resulted in a very long civil war and the king having his head chopped off.
Oh, I would think, I don't think the queen's interested in that.
The thing is that since then, the executive powers have been vested in the prime minister.
Uh-huh.
But they are still constitutionally in the hands of the monarch. Will have to be the one who makes the formal announcement, but it's always at the behest of the prime minister. So she has to do what the prime minister says.
Ooh, really?
She cannot. Otherwise, she loses her political power. It's a strange catch-22 situation.
That is a strange situation. So Boris Johnson, of course, now the prime minister. By the way, what was the vote on his decision?
It hasn't happened yet. 22nd, 23rd of July.
Okay, I was just saying you. But
he's leading in the polls.
Okay, so the anticipation. So Boris Johnson would simply go to the Queen and simply say, I'm handing you, as the prime minister, the controls of our government over to you to make these decisions.
No. What? I am suspending Parliament and taking control of all legal and governmental matters.
Okay, so Boris Johnson would take control.
Yes.
But he has to be approved.
In order for that to be done, Queen, you have to prorogue, quote, or prorogue slash suspend parliament.
Oh.
So that it cannot block anything I want to do.
And she could deny it. However, she must do what the
prime. If she denies it, then if she says no, that would be a huge constitutional crisis, because she has to do, by convention, by political convention, anything the prime minister tells her to do. So she has the power. She has power which she can't use.
I am looking forward to this being further embellished in the near term. We're moving on. That, Tom, of all the pieces of information you've shared with me over these many years, and particularly in this program, I think that is significant. I am fascinated by that.
It's a constitutional crisis.
It is amazing. Let's talk here for a moment. I want to talk, we'll get to Putin here in a moment if we can. I think it's immaterial. Concerns over Chancellor Merkel's health and leadership related to the European Union. There are some concerns about that. What is the news coverage on that? By the way,
it's being covered. She's got the shakes.
Right.
They just seem to come on every now and then.
Okay.
Nobody has said exactly why. It's very interesting. I've been reading the German press on this. They're all very concerned.
Okay.
But they're very concerned for what they call Mutti,
which is,
and that is their name for Chancellor Merkel.
Okay.
Mutti means mother in German.
So they're concerned for her personal well-being, not necessarily.
Yeah, they have a very high regard,
right,
for Chancellor Merkel. They may disagree with her policies. They feel free to criticize them, but they respect her as a person.
Okay.
And that is coming over a lot these days, and they're all very concerned about her.
Okay. What impact would this have, her absence have, and very quickly, on the European Union, particularly in the midst of Brexit?
I don't think a great deal.
Okay.
She's already announced that she's going to be
stepping
resigning.
Down. Right.
And AMP, as she's called, or AMK, is more or less taking over more and more of her roles. They are very much a democracy. They have a transition from one government to another.
So
it doesn't rely on personalities the way, say, Russia would.
Right. It's not that significant. Significant won't have that much of an impact. You mentioned Russia very quickly about 2 minutes ago. Putin, what is liberalism? He's saying that
there was an interesting piece on the BBC website about this.
Uh-huh.
And the fact is that there, Putin used a few examples of LGBT, multiculturalism and immigration as an example of liberalism being dead. But that is only part of liberalism, is what the BBC website said. There's economic liberalism.
Okay. Okay.
Which focuses on free trade and globalism. And that is not dead.
All right.
There's also the emphasis on the rule of law.
Right.
Of course, Putin would love to throw out the window.
All right. Let's just interrupt up, because we had to go to break. In essence, what he's saying is liberalism is a form of globalism, is what he's equating.
No, what he's saying is the bits of liberalism, there are bits of liberalism which are having difficulties. So let's just throw out the whole lot.
Okay.
Completely.
All right.
Because the rest of the lot really doesn't help Russia and his system of government.
Well, no question about it. All right, we'll take a quick break on that with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, I've just got just a few moments left in the program. We want to get to the world's biggest food fight, but I want to ask you a very quick question and look forward to a very quick answer. The events in Hong Kong, and the fact that Hong Kong has been seeing these riots as a result of greater influence and control by China. Don't want to get into the details, but my question is there a feeling that Hong Kong may be on a fast track of losing its privileges in advance of the indicated deadline for the eventual takeover by China?
Which is 2047.
Is
again, I was talking to a friend, and we sort of agreed that what's happening is that China is taking two steps forward, taking away those privileges, and then sort of testing the waters, taking one step back.
Okay. It's more of a I understand that situation, because it's going to be a major change, and so they're trying to institute some realities for Hong Kong. Let's go to the world's biggest food fight. This is a portion I always look forward to with you, Tom. Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com. Where is the world's biggest food fight, and who participates, and how do you declare the winner?
Well, first of all, it's on the 29th of August, so you've got lots of time to buy your tickets for Valencia in Spain for the Tomatina. And basically, they dump in the center of the city tons, hundreds, thousands of tons of rotten tomatoes.
Tomatoes, yes. Tomatoes or tomatoes?
Rotten, and people just pick them up and throw them at each other.
All right, are these tomatoes or tomatoes?
Oh, they're tomatoes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. When I first moved to this country, I used to go to the market to buy my tomatoes, and I always asked for tomatoes, and they refused to serve me, so I ended up saying tomatoes.
Okay. Valencia, Spain. August 29, you say?
August the 29th, world's biggest food fight. And you just get covered in tomatoes.
Tomatoes. All right. My question is...
Tomatoes.
Who participates? Anybody?
Anyone who turns up. And they come from all over the world.
Oh. And is there...
My son has been to it. I haven't. Well, he said he never had quite so much fun.
Is there a declared winner?
No declared winner. It's just try and not be covered with tomato juice.
Tom Arms of...
tomato juice.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, who's having a hard time pronouncing the word tomato, or is that tomato? Tom, as always, thank you for being with us. Look forward to next week.
Thank you.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.